Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
This is the Shame-Free Zone, and I am your host, Veronica Monet. It's another Monday. It's the longest day of the year, as a matter of fact. Those of you who are keeping touch, early this morning, about 4:30 in the morning, actually 4:24 a.m. to be specific, was the exact moment of the summer solstice. And I don't know about you, but I was out on my upper deck meditating for that leak in the Gulf to finally get stopped up, so we could stop having that horrific oil spill. And then I also sent out a wish for my own personal prosperity. So those are the kind of things I do at 4:30 in the morning sometimes. But we are going to be talking about sex and spirit, which, by the way, has everything to do with prosperity. If you don't know that yet, then we'll be perhaps expanding your horizons a little bit. I've got an excellent guest. Her name is Ellen Ito, and she is actually CEO of something called Ecstatica, which sounds really, really exciting. She has a master's degree in East-West psychology. She's a certified hypnotherapist. She's a trained practitioner in the following therapies: colored light therapy, biofeedback, body talk, timeline therapy, confluent somatic therapy, and the use of the inner quest system. I suspect we're going to have to ask her what some of these things are, because I don't actually know. And one of the things she's got is a program called Four Keys to Sexual Ecstasy. She's going to be telling us a little bit about that. And we're also going to be talking about the split, this unnatural split that has taken place between sex and spirituality. But without further ado, Ellen, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica. I'm delighted to be here. And on a great day, you know, the solstice is a great day for new beginnings and new perspectives.
It really is. And, you know, I noticed here, I was looking at your bio, and it says that in 1991, you started using vibrational frequencies. And then after several years of that work, while you were in the middle of your master's degree program, you suddenly began having dramatic and spontaneous encounters with sexual spiritual ecstasy. So dramatic that you became a research subject in the study by Dr. Jenny Wade.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Dr. Wade's, actually. Never met her, but I read her book, Transcendent Sex. So are you in the book, Transcendent
Sex? It's a great book,
Sex?
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I am in the book, and I'm not the one named Ellen. That's not me. I'm kind of I'm in one story and sprinkled throughout the book with many references. So you won't know who I am by reading the book, but I am in there, and I have had really transcendent sexual experiences, quite a matter of grace.
Well, for our listeners who maybe are wondering if they've had a transcendent sexual experience, can you give them your definition of that? What constitutes a transcendent sexual experience?
Well, you know, the thing is, Dr. Wade, you know, she's a brilliant researcher, and the book is really, her research is basically about consciousness. And her definition, I'll try to give you if I can recall, but it's basically an experience where you have some kind of change of agency, which is like perception of who you are, like you experience being somebody else or something else, or, you know, animals or other people or grasses in the field, whatever it is, or a change in, another definition would be a change in time or place. So the thing is, she uses that term for transcendent, and it's, you know, and so the stories in her book are quite extraordinary. I do believe, however, that people can have what they experience sort of subjectively as a transcendent experience, and it wouldn't necessarily mean that they have a change in the perception of agency or time or space. So that's her definition, and then some people can just feel like they are God making love through the human experience, or have a direct palpable experience of light and energy, and that feels pretty transcendent, you know?
Absolutely.
She was narrowing the definition from a psychological perspective. So, you know, well, both are true. Both are true.
There is actually an experience of, well, when I was reading her book, one of the things that struck me, first of all, is that none of these people had any professional training. So they weren't like, you know, yogis and tantrikas or dakinis.
Yeah, that was
or
very
whatever.
Specific in her research. She wanted people who did not have any specific training in tantra or whatever, and they had not been using any specific meditative practice, and they weren't using any kind of mind-altering substances. A glass or two of alcohol was about the maximum that she was allowing for the purpose of her research.
Yeah, and what I really liked about that, too, was that there was this lack of pretentiousness.
Yeah.
So, you know, no offense to my friends in the Tantra community. I happen to be a huge fan of Tantra and actually teach certain limited forms of it. I certainly do not consider myself a Tantric teacher as such. But some of the turf wars that take place about what's real Tantra, what's true Tantra. My Tantric master is better than your Tantric master. This is the only true Tantra. It's nauseating after a while.
It can be. You know,
and
what I loved
about the people in Jenny Wade's book was that they just, they were just, you know, getting together for a one-night stand or having sex with their husband or their wife, and boom, out of the blue, this amazing thunderbolt comes and strikes them and changes their life forever.
That's what makes it so amazing. And the thing that I found, even though the stories varied enormously, the common theme was people would have these experiences, and they all felt it had a spiritual ramification, or it felt like a spiritual experience. So it was a sexual experience, but it transcended what we commonly think of as sex and became a spiritual experience. And that was certainly true for me. I mean, I got to a place where, for me, prayer was making love, because it was such a spiritual, and it is such a spiritual expression.
Such a spiritual what?
I'm losing you.
Ellen, you're breaking up there, girl.
I've never had that happen on this phone. It seems fine. I've got strong reception here. I'm on a landline.
That must be the funny feeling I had in my tummy. It wasn't that you weren't going to show up.
We're back on.
We were going to have technical difficulties. Oh, well. Are you still there?
I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, strong. You're loud and clear right now.
If I may make a recommendation, I don't know if you're talking off of portable, but you might want to keep it in one position so that we don't lose the signal.
Okie doke.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a drag, but I even have to do that for mine. I'm not talking off a cell phone, but it is, a portable phone, so I have to point it towards the...
Right.
The,
you can hardly get phones that aren't portable anymore.
I'm telling you. Most people don't even have landlines anymore. But, okay, so back to this exciting idea about sex becoming more spiritual. That does kind of beg the question, doesn't it, about the split between sex and spirit. Like, how do you know where one begins and the other one ends?
Well, I don't think one really does. I don't think there really is a beginning and an ending between the two. But I think our culture has caused this split. In fact, see, when Jenny Wade was doing her research and her book was coming out, her publisher wanted her to do workshops on the subject. Well, she goes, I'm a consciousness researcher. I don't do sex workshops. So she called me because she knew what I did, and I was obviously, I understood the situation and the subject. And so she called me to do workshops, and I was really, it took a while to figure out, you know, how do you, this is sort of a matter of grace, but how do you somehow teach people to open themselves to these kinds of experiences? Well, one thing led to another, and I've been leading workshops around the country on this topic, and I was teaching at a retreat center outside Austin, Texas, a few years ago. I was teaching couples about having, you know, sexual, spiritual ecstasy. And at dinner, the leader of another workshop was a psychologist, and we had dinner together, and she said, you know, I noticed that people who are in the healing arena, who teach anything that has to do with healing, typically have some wound of their own that leads them into this work. And so she asked me what my wound is, and I went, well, gosh, you know, I've been working for years with helping people release sexual and relationship trauma, and I've done lots of, you know, inner investigation and healing and all this, and I honestly don't think I've had any personal sexual trauma in the sense that might seem extreme, like rape, molestation, or incest, that sort of thing. And,
right,
of course, we tap into the collective, and so I am quite aware of that. But all of a sudden, I went, oh, my God, my wound is this split between sexuality and spirituality. And it's not just my wound. It's a big cultural wound. I mean, look at the whole, you know, Madonna whore complex, you know, that people talk about. So we don't really have a place in our culture, at least we haven't traditionally. I mean, this is beginning to change, thankfully. But people have been put, and religion has put sex in one department and spirituality in another. And this goes as far back as the Greeks, like Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates. They talked about the psyche and the soma. The soma is everything physical, and the psyche is mental and spiritual. And the soma was the feminine, the body, the kind of messy side of life, including menstruation and birth and all these things. And so they elevated the psyche and spirituality and mental processes and considered it the masculine and really elevated above the feminine. And it was kind of the beginning of misogyny, as I understand. So
right. The
split is carried through into our culture, and it's become so deeply ingrained that we don't even know it's happening. I mean, I didn't even know it was happening until somebody really put me to the question. And it just came full blown of like, oh my God, that's why I've been motivated. It's been very painful for me throughout my adult life. I just didn't really have the words for it. And I was moved in this direction, and I think it's what led me to be in a situation where I started having these experiences. But, you know, that's not even typical, which is sad.
I hear exactly what you're saying. So what you're saying is that our sex-negative culture is actually creating trauma for all of us.
Oh, yes. And I know a lot of people who feel, because let me just back up a little. I, rather than teaching Tantra and Taoist sexuality, I draw from those traditions, and then I bring it to the mainstream in sort of everyday language that the mainstream can relate to. And because of this, the kinds of clients that I get are typically people who are more of these unpretentious folks that you are referring to, and they contend with either in themselves or with their partners the negative fallout of this split. So the view that, you know, sex is negative and dirty, and if we're Christian or if we're, you know, spiritual, then you can't have them in the same place or the same mindset. And it's really, they very consciously kind of partition their lives. Which is,
definitely,
you know, which I think is very, very wounding, and it's very, it's just the opposite of wholeness.
It's very disturbing. I work with, you know, couples, and I see, unfortunately, way too many married couples who feel that their sex probably has kind of a stamp of approval, if you will. It's you know, it's approved by the church, whatever church they may belong to, just by virtue of the fact that they've got a license to have sex with each other. And yet, the content and the tenor and the intention and the energy of that marital sex can oftentimes approximate more like something like rape.
Oh, wow.
There's just so little actual emotional or spiritual connection with each other. And it's really sad to me. I see, especially for wives sometimes, this great wounding around just having had sex. I personally think this is why a lot of wives will lose interest in having sex at some point. A lot of wives will lose interest in having sex at some point in marriage. This is a big complaint. It's, well, you know, if the sex has basically been bereft of the spiritual connection, it really doesn't feed you. Then it just kind of becomes this kind of like a bathroom function.
And especially when women, you know, even women who like sex because they had the hormonal drive, when they move into menopause, I think a lot of women who lose their interest in sexuality after menopause, kind of like, well, if they had been having lovemaking, if they'd been receiving the kind of sexual attention from their partners that really nurtures and opens them to their deepest feminine sexual self, then menopause would not necessarily lead them to lose interest, because they would have what you're talking about. They would have it would be an energetic experience. It would be a spiritual and emotional experience as well as just physical. And with all of that, then who would want to give that up? You know, especially
right.
If they were also having great physical sex along with that. But if they're just serving as a, you know, as a tool for their partner, then it's like, okay,
well, exactly.
I'm done.
Exactly. And you know, it makes me think of that old tantric saying of, you know, the way to a man's heart is through his sex, but the way to a woman's sex is through her heart.
Yes.
Which I have found to be true more times than not.
Oh, yes. Likewise.
Yeah, I feel a sense of grieving for women especially, but, you know, also men. Just because their sexual desire has been so demonized by the culture.
It has. And, you know, we're so confronted with sexuality in the media in every possible way, but most men and women don't have an easy way to learn how to be great lovers. I mean, it's not part of our culture. We don't teach people how to, you know, raise their kids well, or to be great partners, or to be great sexual partners, you know?
Right.
So, where are people who are not interested in specifically, you know, getting into pornography or whatever, and that's a terrible place to learn how to be a great lover. It serves its function, but it's not a great place to learn how to be a great lover, as you well know. So, where are people supposed to learn this? And so it's sad for a lot of these men because they really just don't know. In fact, I read recently there was a great statistic that something like, I don't have the exact statistic, but a huge percentage of women in a recent Men's Health magazine study said that their partners didn't satisfy them sexually, and great contrast to like 90% of the men who thought they were very good lovers. So men think they're doing
those,
fine,
those
and the women are saying,
sorry,
honey, it's not working out.
Right. It is sad. I mean, you know, no offense to men, but there does seem to be this big disconnect around many men's perceptions of their, you know, whether, you know, you must have seen a cartoon where the guy is imagining that he actually is a young, ripped hunk, right? But he's actually balding and has a big beer gut. And then standing next to him is his wife, who, you know, is probably of average appearance. But when she thinks about herself, she sees herself 20 years older, 20 pounds heavier.
Oh, I haven't seen that, but what a great image. Yeah, and I think that's probably pretty accurate. Yeah, about how our self-images are very distorted in opposite directions.
Well, you know, even just looking at the media, it sure is. I get so frustrated. I love movies, absolutely love movies. It's a great escape for me. Like Sunday or, you know, Saturday night, Sunday, it's a great day for me to watch movies. And I just can't find any movies out there where the women are, like, past 40. Or if they are, then there has to be some reference to the fact that they're past 40. Like, we have forgiven them for being older, or we can't forgive them for being older. But for the men, it's like they're in their 60s and 70s, and we're supposed to pretend that they're not.
Yes, men are allowed to age much more gracefully in film than women are, that's for sure. And it's been
They're not, you know, that is certainly a myth, gracefully. They're not.
Well, but I mean,
gracefully.
There's more roles for men in their 50s than there are for women. There are
absolutely
roles for women who are very old,
see themselves through women's eyes, because they definitely look old to me. I'm not like going, oh, wow, you can't even tell he's 70. I'm like looking, my God, he's 70.
To try to help people, bridge this gap that so many people experience. And, you know, I get people at all stages of their lives, whether they've been together for 30 years or they're in a new relationship and wanting to get things started right this time, and, you know, younger, older. But I do have a lot of people who are baby boomers and older. And I think that as people evolve in their lives, often it's kind of like regarding sexuality, it can kind of be been there, done that. So now they want more. And men, men are often getting a bad rap in general, because I'm seeing more and more men, and through the surveys that I've done with my on my website and my email list, the men, as much as women, put emotional intimacy as a top priority relative to sexuality now. But I think this is more as men get older. And women get older.
Yes.
It's like, you know, they kind of run the physical gamut, and yeah, they still want great orgasmic sex, but now they want to add deeper, richer dimensions of emotional connection and spiritual connection.
Oh, there certainly are lots of enlightened men, and I have had the pleasure of meeting so many of them, especially the workshops that
I'm sure you have.
Yeah. But and I also found that men, you know, when I was working as an escort, I discovered that men would put hundreds, even thousands of dollars towards learning how to be better lovers and trying to figure out what it was women want. So
yes.
Big focus.
And you were
on
able to teach them that, I'm sure.
Women. I'm sorry, what?
And you're able to teach them that, I'm sure.
Oh, I was. I'm not working as an escort anymore.
Yeah.
It was very enlightening, actually. It shifted my whole attitude towards men. I came to think, well, like, where's the women who have really invested that much time and effort in trying to figure out how to, you know, create orgasmic bliss for men? So, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah.
The gender differences to me are mostly smoke and mirrors. I mean, they are there, but they vary so much from culture and person to person. Anyway, how about we address the four keys to sexual ecstasy? I'm actually dying to find out what that is about.
Okay. So, you know, when Jenny Wade asked me to do workshops with her, I just really, you know, I'd been doing a lot of research to try to figure out what it was that really led to the kind of experiences I was having and how to share those with other people. And I kind of as I researched all this information, I meditated on it and so forth, and what began to come forth were these four basic keys. And before I tell you what they are, what I found was that although I believe they are pivotal in some way to having these transcendent sexual experiences, what I found is that when I teach them to people, the result, even if they don't have these otherworldly experiences, they end up having the best sex of their lives. So I figure, hey, you know, that's a wonderful result. So the four keys, as I define them, are trust, entrainment, absorption, and the fourth is building and circulating sexual energy.
So let me see if I got this right. Trust, entrainment. So you're talking about E-N-T-R-A-I-N.
Yes.
Okay. Absorption, and what was the final one?
Building and circulating sexual energy.
Building and circulating.
You know, a lot of people don't think about that. They start having sex and they work toward, you know, it's kind of the old Masters and Johnson paradigm, which is,
right.
You know, you get aroused and you kind of build toward orgasm and you have an orgasm and the man has an ejaculation and then it's basically over and you gradually decline. And for women, if they're really lucky, they might have a couple of orgasms on the way. But as you know, with Tantra and Taoist sexuality, they teach people how to build and circulate sexual energy. I liken it to a rocket, and that is you have to have enough power behind that rocket to blast it off, not only to get off the ground, but to get it through the atmosphere to where it can then keep going into orbit or into outer
right.
space. Once you get beyond the resistance of the atmosphere, then you're into a whole new realm, and you can, you know, as things open, as and this can often lead to the, you know, the kundalini energy opening up in people, and as the energy pulses through, you can go on almost indefinitely, or as long as your body has, you know, as long as you have physical energy to go with it. And this helps you open to the, you know, new dimensions, and it helps you go deeper, and it's very exciting because it's not just sitting in, you know, yab-yum position in Tantra. It can be very exciting, pulsating, throbbing sex. It can be very sweet and sensual. It can have all different dimensions. But the idea of building and circulating the sexual energy, I think, is very important. And there's lots of very specific tips you can get into to help people do that. But I don't think people usually think of it in that way.
And this is very similar to what one does in meditation, yes?
It can be. I don't think everybody does that in meditation, but it can be, yes.
True enough. I was talking to somebody the other day that meditation was just about... So they did the chanting, but no conscious breathing. Wow.
Yeah. And breath has
meditation
a huge impact.
Without conscious
impact.
Breathing, wow.
Yeah, breath has a huge impact.
It really does. Breath has a huge impact on everything. We've got a couple of comments here off of Facebook. I asked people, what is the difference between sex and spirituality? Jean Coderre, I hope I've said your name properly, says perspective. And then we've got Cato Perez says, all I can say is that good sex, the big O, and you will see heaven. Love is a wonderful feeling, and great sex with someone you love can cause pure bliss. That's pretty spiritual to me. Punch drunk, lay there, and solve all life's problems with a feeling that's heavenly. Sex will make a person more spiritual. Yes or no?
Is that what that person said, or that's what you're asking me?
Well, that's what he's asking you. Cato Perez.
Yeah. That's great.
Sex will make a person more spiritual, yes or no?
Oh, well, I don't think necessarily. I mean, you know, animals have sex. I think what makes us human, in part, is the other aspects of sex that really have great sex, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. That makes us spiritual. I don't think that just having sex makes us spiritual, in my opinion. Although, you know, there's another perspective, which is we can't not be spiritual, so we are intrinsically so.
Well, just to give it another perspective.
What do you think?
Hear your answer, and I just want to say that I've seen lots of animals have spiritual sex. I think they do all kinds of spiritual things, but anywho.
But do you think that sex automatically makes us spiritual?
Well, you know,
more than we
really
already are, I mean, we are spiritual.
It really gets to the whole discussion about what is sex, because everybody says that this is a sexually, our culture is just really sexually saturated, right? But as a former sex worker, I can't see the sex. I see a lot of anger, hatred, violence, jockeying for social position, which I suppose could be similar to when dogs hump each other to try to establish dominance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you've ever seen dogs hump each other to establish dominance and then actually seen a mated pair of dogs make love to each other, there's absolutely no comparison whatsoever. And I kind of feel the same way about humans. I see them humping each other a lot, and I don't see them making love. So it's kind of hard for me to see sex in the culture. I see a lot of anger.
Yeah.
A lot of anger and a lot of fear.
Yeah. And actually, you know, animals, to be honest, they're not going to have all the messy stuff and psychological stuff around sex that we have. So maybe it's much purer and more spiritual, like you're saying, you know?
Well, I have a mated pair of they both have since transitioned, but I had a mated pair of German Shepherds that was amazing. It was quite eye-opening, if you can imagine. I'm out there working with human beings trying to teach them how to have sacred sexual experiences, and most of the people that I'm working with are really advanced in Tantra, you know, they're advanced in yoga and meditation. And then my dogs go and do something for 12 hours that puts us all to shame.
Wow.
Like,
and you had the privilege of seeing that, of witnessing that.
I really feel that, yes, and I'm sure that the dogs too, that were attracted to my energy would happen to
sure.
be those kind of dogs, you know. I'm not saying all the dogs on this planet are having tantric sex, but mine were. And
that's
I
great.
Felt very intimidated. Wow. I've never run a 12-hour class, so it's like, boy, these guys are up to sting, I guess, rumored.
That's great. They were channeling energy, huh?
But yes, the lack of shame, I do think. Now, I don't know, I'm sure you are familiar with the bonobos, right?
Yes.
The bonobos. There's actually a beautiful book now out by, I think her name is Valerie Wood, and it's called Bonobo Handshake, and she is saying what I've been saying all along, but she put it in print, so I'm really happy somebody did, which is basically, and, you know, the bonobos have found a way to live peacefully, and most people know that, but I think it's really hard for them to understand that their sexual connections to each other are the key to that, and, you know, people will try to dismiss it as eliminating sexual frustration. I don't believe that's it, because they actually do a lot of eye gazing. I mean, if you think about it, they align their chakras, they gaze into each other's eyes, they share breath, and they do this, you know, quite frequently throughout the day. And so then, lo and behold, no rape, no murder, no war. Who knew?
Interesting. You know, that's partly what entrainment is, and I think a lot of people don't understand, but one of the...
I have no clue what
why...
you mean by that, so please tell me, and I will post
okay.
it here on Facebook. I already put trust, entrainment, absorption, and building a circulating sexual energy, Elenito's
yes.
formula for sexual ecstasy.
Entrainment is something that's been understood by the ancients. And they didn't call it entrainment, but science has now proven what they have been wisely practicing for millennia. Entrainment is when the rhythms of one thing, it could be an animal, an inanimate object, when the rhythms of something actually cause the rhythms of another to shift and come into rhythm with it. For example, if you take 100 pendulum clocks, and they've done this, and put them on a wall, you can't possibly put all the pendulums in exactly the same microsecond. So it's going to sound pretty chaotic when they're all tick-tocking, you know, at different microseconds.
Okay.
But if you leave them alone for 2 or 3 days, these clocks will all come into perfect synchrony.
I've heard about this before. What causes this?
Well, it's a phenomenon on the planet called entrainment.
Oh my
That's
God.
What entrainment is. And just like, and apparently, and I don't live on the East Coast with a lot of fireflies, but apparently fireflies, when they come into a swarm, they'll be blinking all at their own pace, but gradually when they fly together for a while, they'll start blinking on and off at the same time. And likewise, your own body, within your body, your organs, your vital systems will entrain with one another. Your heart, your brain waves, your breath. And this is why when you meditate and you slow your breath down, your heart rate will slow down and your brain waves will gradually slow down. And then when you, and this is why they've done research to show that if you hook people up to, you know, electrodes to measure their brain waves,
right,
that when two people experience having a really deep conversation where they really feel in sync, in fact, their brain waves are starting to tune up. So you can feel in sync with another person, you know, mentally through your brain waves. And the eyes are like the frontal lobes of the brain. So when you're looking and gazing into another person's eyes and then you're breathing together, your breath will start to synchronize your own bodily rhythms and the same rhythm as the other person if you're breathing together. And then if you add to that the eye gazing, you're supporting the synchronization of your brain waves, which causes you to feel really in sync and starts to create this incredible energetic field and rhythm together. And in fact, I know a woman who teaches Tantra, and she said she and a lover actually hooked themselves up to electrodes while they were having sex to see what happened. And as they breathed together and did the eye gazing and were doing the tantric practices, they found that all of these rhythms did in fact come into synchronization. Their brain waves were zapped, just locking into a common rhythm.
So that's,
so I think that's pretty exciting.
You know, if you're having transcendent sex or tantric sex, you know, sometimes the experience, if you have a partner, is of being one person.
Yes, yes. One with another person.
So literally, what you're telling me is
one
the
brain with all
waves,
it is.
The breathing and the internal organs, everything is syncing up so that on some level you really are one person in that moment.
Yes, you are. And I think that also increases the chances that you'll feel at one with all that is. And because people often have difficulty with this, and I've been working with energetic frequencies and brainwave entrainment and so forth for a long time in my private practice and in other, you know, and with groups, I developed this lovemaking enhancement system called Four Keys to Sexual Ecstasy. And one of the many components is this music for lovemaking, which not only has brainwave entrainment to help you and your partner entrain to slower rhythms, because the brainwaves, when you get into slower brainwave states, like especially theta, if you can get a predominance of theta waves going in your brain, it really heightens your sensory perception.
Okay.
And your holistic experience of your partner, and it really opens you to a bigger heart connection. And then we took this music and infused them with 14 layers of energetic frequencies, which actually make it a very, it increases the intensity of your experience and helps open people or helps link people to that physical and spiritual connection. And when the music supports the entrainment of two people and then takes it to another level with these energetic frequencies, it can really support quite ecstatic experiences. And we've had a side benefit that we did not expect, and I'm not saying you can guarantee, but we've had so many people tell us that it jumpstarts the libido, especially people who are, you know, men are in andropause and women in menopause. It helps, you know, refuel their libido.
The music does.
Yes. I had this music specially composed with brainwave entrainment built in and then the energetic and frequency layered into the music with some really cutting-edge technology. We have a patent pending on it. Yeah.
Is this good for both couples and groups and people masturbating?
Yes. And
wow.
In fact, I also have a guided experience for couples to go into a experience of deep intimacy, which includes getting into this and really takes the four keys to sexual ecstasy that they've learned about earlier in the program and then helps them take it into their physical and emotional experience in the bedroom with their partner or with themselves. And I do have people who buy this being single, and the guided experience is designed to help you, even if you are using it alone, to enter into a deeper connection with your own self and your sexuality, and really work. A lot of people buy it to work with their own sexual energy. And I have used it in groups, and some of these workshops, I was getting more and more people asking for more sort of intimate experience, maybe optional as part of the program. So I started incorporating an optional evening when people would wear like kimonos or robes so they could be sort of open to their partner, but not to the entire group.
Right.
And using the music for guided experiences with that, and quite extraordinary responses. You know, people just saying, oh my God, this is what I so wanted and needed. It just like really helped couples that have been together for years open to new dimensions and rebond.
This also kind of leads to the topic of sound, how important sound is to orgasm. That I think a lot of us have learned to be quiet, you know, because this perhaps first sexual experiences, whether masturbation or, you know, with as a teenager, but oftentimes trying to get by with something, either from the prying eyes of parents or college roommates, but this lack of privacy.
I'm sure that's
a lot,
you know, why
learn,
we are so often
learn how
quiet.
To orgasm quietly.
Yeah, unfortunately, because that does it does limit. You know, the pelvis and the jaw are physiologically as well as energetically linked. They're sort of like the opposite poles. They're like the second and fifth chakra, energetically. And I've even talked to, you know, physical therapists and doctors, and they say that, you know, the pelvis, if you look at the physiology of the pelvic bones and the jaw structure, it's really, they're kind of, in some ways, mirroring one another. And they say that if you heal one, you can help heal the other. So if you heal your self-expression verbally, or loosen up in the throat, you could help heal yourself sexually, and vice versa.
Wow.
If you help heal yourself sexually, you can help heal your self-expression. So allowing your voice to express itself sexually is just a great thing to be doing. And, of course, the sound, you know, sound is energy. And so when you make sound, you're energizing your own system, and it's exciting to your partner. And a lot of people are, of course, as you said, afraid to let their sounds out, and they're afraid of the neighbors hearing. And I was told a great story by a woman who was, she said, you know, she was very expressive sexually, and she loved to make lots of noise and scream and laugh and all kinds of things when she was making love. And she lived in a building where, you know, her window opened up to courtyards where other people, you know, could hear.
Right.
And when she was moving out after having lived there for 13 years, a neighbor whom she'd only seen and never actually spoken to came up to her to say goodbye and thanked her for inspiring many nights of rapture with her husband.
Oh, my God. You're kidding.
No.
That is so cool.
So we think that we're going to be damned if people hear us, but the truth is, you know, we can help inspire and free other people by our own example.
Wow. No, that's very inspiring. It really is. I think we're
And then I heard another woman talk about the concern. I heard another woman who was asked, I wish I had thought of this myself, but she said, well, what about the children hearing you? You know, she was asked a question like, oh, you'd have to be quiet because your children might hear you. And she said, you know, when you're raising children, you should explain to them that sometimes mommy and daddy make noises, and it's not because anybody's being heard, but it's just one way that we express our love for each other. And, you know, so that you should know that when you hear these sounds, that you're in a house full of love. And what
Absolutely.
A different perspective that has on a family.
Yeah, it's very strange how we... Kids grew up in small little one-room cabins and teepees and tents, and, you know, they were not traumatized. But, you know, we're so afraid now that they're going to get exposed to even the sound of sex that's going to ruin them.
Yeah. I think you do have to tell children, though, that it's nothing harmful because, you know, some of the sounds of sex can sound pretty scary.
Oh, I know
child,
the first time I heard my parents, I thought Daddy was hurting Mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to explain. You know, I think they have to be informed that it can be good, that it sounds like that can also mean pleasure.
Right.
Depending on the circumstances.
Because it's not in the usually a child's experience. Even though they have now established that... babies are masturbating in the womb.
Oh, yeah, my first one was born with an erection.
I'm sorry,
and I think that's pretty common, yeah.
Your child was born with an erection?
Yeah, and I'm told that's pretty common.
Now, did you do conscious birthing?
Yes.
Because that's an amazing movement. I am so excited about, you know, women learning how to connect their orgasms to the birth process.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't doing that. That was too long ago. I wasn't conscious of when you say conscious birthing, I think I was using a different definition.
Yeah.
Although I did have an out-of-body experience while I was giving birth. It wasn't because I was trying to.
Oh, well, awesome. I mean, what was that like?
Well, it was just that I actually had this particular birth was a very long and difficult delivery. I was in labor for 56 hours, so I was pretty exhausted, and I was pushing for 5 hours, and at one point I just sort of rose up above and I saw an image of a friend with praying hands, a woman friend, and as it turns out, she actually was doing that. She knew I was in labor, and she was, you know, praying for me while I was having this baby, and she pictured this little boy, and we didn't know I was having a boy. So, you know, it was just, I had all this light and energy and saw the image of her, which was sort of like a Madonna kind of image. And so that's what that was like. And then that ended, and I kept on with the labor. So, I was doing natural childbirth, but it wasn't maybe as conscious as it would if I was doing it now.
Oh, it sounds like a transcendent experience anyway.
It was.
We don't want to take the birth thing into the whole hierarchy, snobby thing either. You had an amazing experience. I think that's beautiful. And your son was born with an erection. Obviously, he was very happy. So, we actually have a couple other quotes here, which is kind of fun. Ferrero, Sweden says that both sex and spirituality lead to the same result. So obviously he feels that they are connected, and then we had a fun one here. Eric Johnson weighed in on the whole: are we dominance humping each other? He says, "Oh my God, Veronica, you're right. The whole culture is running around dominance humping each other. My ass gets so sore."
That's cute.
And I'm feeling you, Eric. I'm feeling you. Sometimes mine gets a little sore, too. So, with the time that we have remaining, a couple of things I want to make sure we touch upon. Just if you can help us understand trust, entrainment, absorption, building and circulating sexual energy. These are the four keys to sexual ecstasy.
These are what I consider four keys. Say they're necessarily the only, but when you I bring in things like breathing and so forth as part of the building and circulating sexual energy. So
right.
I just focus.
So let's go one by one here. Trust. Are you trusting your partner, yourself, the universe, the goddess, what?
All of that. You just summed it up very nicely.
Okay.
But I will say, so part of it is like having a trust in a benevolent universe. But there's also trusting, there's many levels, really. One is, can you be trustworthy enough to allow your partner to express him or herself however they do, whether it's writhing and screaming or being very still or grimacing, whatever that might be, and can you feel trusting enough to be able to do the same yourself? Can you trust enough to surrender to pleasure and surrender to the moment? Not just surrendering to a person, but just surrendering in general. But I have a colleague, Alex Allman, who has a very interesting take on trust relative to sex. And that is, there's a difference between sexual trust and relationship trust. And he used the analogy of flying in an airplane. Let's say you trust your lover with your life. You trust him to, you know, to take care of you if you're sick. You trust him to handle finances well. You trust him to be, you know, trust him with your children. You trust him to keep agreements, whatever it is.
Right.
But when you're flying in an airplane, do you want your lover to be flying that plane, or somebody who's put in a bazillion hours and has a record for getting, you know, landing airplanes safely in extreme situations? Well, that's like airplane trust. You don't care if there's somebody who keeps their agreements or has your finances in order, or you can trust them with your kids. You want somebody who has very specific flight skills. So he's saying that sexually, you can have great relationship trust, but it doesn't necessarily translate to bedroom trust or sexual trust. Because in that point, you want somebody that you can, especially he's suggesting women trusting a man or a man being skilled and confident enough to help a woman surrender to herself and to her own pleasure. And so that he also needs to build his skills and confidence so that he has sexual trust, like pilot trust in the bedroom. So, you know, trust means a whole lot of things. But I do feel that it's very difficult to really let go to your full capacity for sexual pleasure if you don't have trust. And ironically, sometimes it's easier to surrender and trust somebody you don't even know. This is partly why I think some of those one-night stands in Jenny Wade's book resulted in sexual transcendence, you know, ecstatic
right.
transcendent sex. Because, you know, when you're in love with somebody and you have a lot to lose if they don't like the way you're behaving, like if you suddenly go into a state of rapture and grimacing and screaming and contorting in a way that your partner that you've been with forever has never seen, you risk that they won't like it, that they'll be turned off. And you care because you love them. But if it's a stranger, you know, there's just so much less to lose. So sometimes we can surrender more easily to a stranger. That's just something
fascinating. I love that. I've never thought about it that way. This is a very, very, I mean, this must be a whole topic in and of itself. The various different levels of trust, the different areas of trust, and what it means.
So there's building trust then in a relationship, a different kind of trust that can be, you know, really being able to trust each other in a very deep way can really enhance your sex life.
Absolutely. And I've never thought about that with strangers, that there is less to lose, and so we feel like we can let go and be who we are.
Yeah. Or even experiment with who we might be. You know, try on different costumes, you know, psychologically, emotionally, behaviorally, rather than physically.
That one actually I have spent quite a bit of time exploring and talking about, but I've often wondered, like, you know, in a one-night stand, sometimes it would feel like you could let go more, and sometimes it's just, you know, your partner has expectations that you're going to be a certain person.
Yes, or you have expectations that your partner has expectations.
Absolutely.
It works both ways. Both are true often.
Absolutely. Okay, so the next one is entrainment, which we talked about, which is about the heart and the organs and the breath and the mind, all of it becoming in sync with each other. And you actually recommend a CD that you put together that has special music and sound effects on it, which are meant to create entrainment. Have I understood that properly?
Yes, and it's part of this whole system. I don't really sell it separately at this point. Partly because it's really so powerful. This music also helps break up patterns. And it's so powerful that part of my system includes coaching calls where people can ask me questions, group coaching calls. So I want to really, at this point, we're discovering it's so potent that I want to keep it in a situation where people, I can really sort of take care of them if they have stuff come up when they're dealing with the music. Now, we haven't had any problems with it, but, you know, when you're breaking up patterns, stuff can come up. You know, we develop patterns throughout our lives. It makes our lives simpler, but it also can be restrictive. And one kind of pattern that we develop is our way of behaving sexually, right down to the sequence of muscles that we tense up as we're approaching orgasm. And so when you start to break up patterns, you can break up the way people relate to each other in a way that can open up a lot of space and potentiality. And it also, I think, is one reason that a lot of women, in particular, when they make love with this music, find that they become more easily orgasmic and often multi-orgasmic. I think it's because we're breaking up patterns, and so you have like a new repertoire of things available that, you know, we get locked into patterns, which can be limiting. In fact,
so
I had one story.
Why do you think people get locked into patterns? And have you noticed that some women will have had a particular sexual response at one stage of their life, and then their sexual response will shift, and they'll, like, maybe, you know, wish they could experience what they used to, but they can't. And I've actually heard men talk about this too, like, just having a hard time getting back to a particular type of orgasmic response.
Well, I have heard that, and I think that you know, we do change physiologically as well as emotionally and psychologically. So sometimes it is a little difficult to go back, and you know, that's a little bit self-defeating because where you are now is really where the potential for pleasure and ecstasy lies. So finding you know, how to go there from where you are is the solution, but I kind of lost where we were with this.
Patterns
are an efficient way of dealing with things. You know, we just have, I'm trying to think of some examples, but our brain looks for sort of shortcuts, and patterns are kind of shortcuts because we just have so much happening in our environment and our lives that it's kind of efficient. If you're going to have an orgasm, if your muscles know what sequence to tense in or what way for you to breathe or a way to move your body, and hopefully you've got some pelvic movement and breath going that are much more supportive of opening to waves of orgasm than just one single peak. But patterns are just something we'd naturally do, but we can also allow them to limit us. And when you break up patterns, I think it just opens up a wider range of possibilities in the moment. And I had one woman, I had a guy call. Actually, I had a copywriter working with me, and he
Ellen,
didn't really believe this music could do much. And I said, well, don't listen to it on earphones. Listen to it, you know, with speakers, because it affects your whole body. And listen to it with your wife when you're making love. Well, he called and said, well, the music didn't do anything for me. And I said, well, how did you listen to it? He said, on my iPod. I said, were you with your wife? And he goes, no. I went, okay. My wife didn't think it did anything for her either. How did she listen to it? Same way on her earphones. So, but not together when they were making love. So he called me a couple weeks later. He said he and his wife had the flu. So he loaned his iPod to a buddy of his who was quite a womanizer. And this guy, we'll call Joe, in Boca Raton, Florida, called him up and said, I got to tell you a story. He said he had one woman that he saw on a regular basis, and she just had a rule. She said she loves sex. She has one orgasm, and that's it for per night, and don't bother trying to get more out of me. So, yeah. She just wanted him to know, don't get too excited. So they made love. She had her orgasm, and then he said, the night is young. And then he put on the music after they'd already had sex and she had her orgasm. Then he put on my CD. And actually, the name of this CD within the whole system is called Love Unbound. Anyway, he put on the music. They made love again, and she proceeded to have three more orgasms. And then she said, what is in that music? So she...
Okay.
He didn't tell her the music was anything special, but she sensed
that
the music had that effect on her. So she had three more orgasms the same evening, when she had a rule that she only had one, you know, and it just opened her to that, and she knew the music had something to do with it.
Amazing.
And so that got reported back to me as an example.
Right, right.
So.
Well, I think that speaks volumes about the effectiveness of the soundtrack that you put together. Now, the next thing I hear was absorption.
Yeah.
What is that about?
So absorption is really your ability to go deeply into your experience, particularly your sensory experience, into your body and into touch, but also into all of your senses, really your ability to really notice sounds and taste and smell and touch and the look of things and the texture. And I think that we're so mental in this culture. We get out of our bodies most of the time, and sex helps bring us back to that. But there was another study that was done by a woman named Dr. Sandra Scantling, and she wrote a book called Ordinary Women, Extraordinary Sex. It's no longer in print. But what she did is she had an intuition about it, because she was researching people that had extraordinary sexual experiences. And there's a psychological assessment tool called the Telligan Absorption Scale, and it's a very long questionnaire, but there were certain chunks of it that she got permission to use, and she had these people who were having the most extreme, wonderful sexual, extraordinary sexual experiences, things like feeling like they were liquefying into their partner's body and colors and sounds and things that were not quite as extreme as in Jenny Wade's research, but still great stories. And
right.
She found that there was a direct and significant correlation between people who had these great experiences and their ability on a measured scale to absorb deeply into their experiences.
Oh.
So this has to do with really being able to absorb into your senses.
So, okay. See if I comprehend this, then. It seems like really you'd have to be firing on all pistons, fully alive. I mean, like, you know, you can taste, you can smell, you can hear. And so I'm not entirely sure, though, how somebody gets to this peak level of absorption. Do you have, I know we don't have a lot of time to go into it, and we don't want to, like, teach your class over the phone here, but maybe just give us some idea of how that's accomplished.
One thing you can do, in fact, there's a simple exercise that I do in some of my workshops, which really have people spend 5 minutes each with music playing in the background, any music, soft, you know, sensual music, and just take turns exploring each other's hand as if it was something they'd never seen before. And the front and the back and looking at the texture and caressing it and feeling it and smelling it. And if people are, you know, lovers, they'll often taste each other's hands. And they find it to be an extremely erotic experience for both partners. And then they switch. And if you can take that kind of intense focus with your partner's body, it just brings whole new rich deep dimension to lovemaking. But that's just one way to begin. But you can do this with anything. You can take a piece of fruit. You know, there's opportunities throughout any day to absorb more fully into your experience. You know, eating an orange or a peach, just take a moment instead of, you know, chomping it down, smell it first and peel it and feel the texture. And then as you start to bite in, you know, let the juices kind of drizzle down your lips or chin. And
I'm getting hungry.
Really hold it in your mouth. Yeah, right? It is hot. So allowing yourself to have these moments throughout the day where you absorb deeply into your experience. Or when you're listening to music, just notice where the music starts to resonate in your body. Often different music will resonate different parts of your body. And allow it to take you into the sensual memories associated with that. So these are all opportunities to practice absorption, because what they found is people may have more or less ability to absorb, but it is something you can train yourself to increase your ability. You can train yourself to increase your absorption by practice.
Okay.
Just like that.
Wow, okay. And then the final one, building and circulating sexual energy.
Well, there's a lot to say about
that. The breath and PC control? Or?
Yes, all of that. And then there are things, and this has to do also with the movement of feminine and masculine sexual energy, like you described, you know, moving up and moving down. But then there's some very specific little tips and techniques. Like a lot of people, they move, you know, they start moving on a crescendo, building energy until they reach a crescendo. And one thing you can do is to allow yourself to imagine that you're blowing up a balloon. And, you know, the first time you try to blow a balloon up with your mouth, it's kind of hard to get it to stretch very far. But if you allow it to retract and then blow again, you'll find that after it's been stretched out a little, it'll blow up farther, more easily on the second try.
Right.
So you can do this with your sexual energy. So if you're just blowing as far as you can the first time, you're going to have an orgasm and a man may ejaculate and then it's kind of over. But if you allow yourself to kind of approach the edge, and get really close and then back down, and then as you keep going, allow yourself to climb, approach the edge, like before orgasm is imminent, and back down, you can find that you can build that energy so that if you do this several times, like getting very close to the edge and backing off, you can find that when you do have an orgasm, it can be at a much more intense level because you've expanded your own energetic balloon.
Absolutely. And that is, I think that sometimes you have to really make a conscious effort to schedule this kind of an approach to pleasure, because people are sometimes like so worried about their schedules and got to go to bed and got to get up and got to get work that they kind of make their sex, you know, a quickie.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with quickies once in a while, but if that's your only fear, it's like eating at McDonald's every day. You're going to get, you know, fat and sloppy,
junk
and
food.
Your health
junk
is going to tank. We need gourmet sex once in a while. Like we need gourmet dinners, you know, and even just, you know, sensuality that doesn't always have to go all the way to sex can do a lot for a relationship and for keeping our sexual energy kind of ready to go, kind of keep us simmering. Just having, you know, kissing and caressing without actually having sex on a frequent basis can keep your, you know, your juices kind of revved up so that you can
Oh, yeah.
Father,
I would think listening to some of this music you're talking about would help too. We're getting towards the, we really need to wrap this up now. So I want, let's talk about how people can get a hold of your materials and how they can sign up for this. Is it a workshop, a teleseminar? What exactly is it?
Actually, it's a system. We actually ship this system to you. It's got five CDs. It's got what I call the living room seminars on two CDs that ideally you would listen to with your partner. It also comes with a book of the transcript so you can listen or make notes and refer back to it. What it really does is it helps people become not only more informed about all of this, but it helps people communicate about sexuality. If you're listening together, you can, you know, compare notes and ask each other, and it really helps create deeper intimacy. Then we have a CD which is the bedroom seminar, which I mentioned to you is a guided experience that starts with, it helps you bring these four keys to sexual ecstasy you've learned about in the living room seminar into your physical and emotional experience with your partner. And it begins with an experience into deep intimacy, and then it segues into sensual massage and guided foreplay. And then it segues into just music for lovemaking. The fourth CD is just the music for lovemaking, and the fifth CD is because we found the music for lovemaking was so altering, we couldn't let people drive or operate heavy machinery with it. So we created a fifth CD with a different combination of energies that still helps break up patterns, and I've got stories about that I won't tell you now, but you can listen. People often use this while they're working or practicing yoga and that sort of thing. And then you get that, plus the book, and then it's included. See, we ship that to you in a beautiful shiny red pouch, and then you get three group coaching calls where you can ask questions, and I present a lot more information, and I also have diagrams and pictures online where we go deeper into each topic.
Well, they sound fabulous. Now, how do they order them?
You can go to 4keys.com, the number 4, K-E-Y-S.com, and actually all of this will be changing in the next couple of days. We've got a new website launching in a few days. So right now, when you get to that site, you won't be able to buy it, but in a couple of days, it'll all be different, and you will be able to buy it again. We've got it off the market as we're making some transitions. But 3 days from now.
Okay.
When most people all listen
to
this.
So the website is the same one that I posted, is it not?
I don't know what you posted, but it's...
I put Ecstatica.
Yes, you can get there from ecstatica.com. Yes.
Uh-huh.
You just click the link that you'll see a picture of a kind of a energetic passion color reds and purples, a couple on the right. It says 4 Keys to Sexual Ecstasy. You click that link and you'll get there.
Okay. Fabulous.
We have this, Ellen, I
got to tell you, I'm all excited now. I want to get this soundtrack.
Well, great. Okay.
Well, I
just
want
to tell you that
website.
I really have watched what you've been doing over the years, and I really so respect and admire how you've taken your experience, and now you're sharing with people in a whole new dimension, and it's very healing work and very important to do.
Well, thank you. I just follow my passion, and it led me some very interesting places. Continues to do so all the time. And I noticed over on Facebook we have a lot of the same friends, like Evelyn Maureen from ASAP. So
I have to admit, I've been a little bit missing in action on Facebook lately. I've been remiss, so I'm going to be getting back to
that. Yeah, we got to pump you up. Anyway, come over and visit my page. I have some fabulous friends.
Okay, sounds very good.
Ellen. Well, very, very great to have you on the show. I hope to have you back.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Great to be here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This was like a mini workshop. It was awesome. I really appreciate it.
Great. Glad you liked it. Not just the information. Wait until we get to the practice.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Have a great evening. Thanks, Ellen.
You too. Good night, Veronica. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. 1-800-250-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.